open the Committee on Rules.
I'm not opening the hearing.
I want to make a correction on the record for all of our committees. You have in front of you for House Bill 2087, which we passed out the other day, that had to do with the nonprofit status of certain historical cemeteries. And I'm, for the record, I want to read a statement that just, we didn't have all this at the time, and I wanted to make sure that you had it, and if there's any concerns, I would love to have those expressed. But for the record, please note that the revenue impact statement indicates that this is a tax expenditure, i.e., the purpose of the waiver is to decrease the cost of maintaining historic cemeteries as a way to help preserve Oregon's historic pioneer cemeteries and as a way to honor and recognize Oregon's pioneer heritage during the 150th anniversary of Oregon statehood. So as you can see, it is a tax expenditure because they are not collecting this fee from these historic cemeteries. And you can see over the next few years it costs about $3,700 and then up to about $15,000 a year that would go into helping maintain those historic cemeteries. So if there's any concern about that, I would love it expressed now. If not, we'll just move on with note that we now have that record in front of you.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
I was able to turn back to the state two-thirds of $15,000 just from savings in my interim budget. So
okay,
I mean, a little bit of perspective, I think.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
Would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you for that, committee. I appreciate it.
Your bill, I think.
So we're going to open a public hearing on 2621. We'll have a short explanation by the administrator, and I'm going to go move over there, and you can be in charge, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Roblin.
Okay. This will be a very short summary on this particular bill. HB 2621 requires an election filing officer to modify the ballot when a vacancy occurred in a position to be elected occurs on or after the 47th day before the date of an election. ORS 254.165 currently requires the secretary to modify the ballot when a vacancy occurs in an office occurs on or after the 30th day before the date of the general election. HB 2621 is a response to a prior situation involving a problem in filling a vacancy under the existing statute.
Thank you.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, distinguished chair and committee members. This bill came to me from my county clerk, and it happened that, and I'll give you the example, this situation occurred in Coos County. Ballots were printed, mailed to the military and out-of-state electors 45 days prior to the election day. A candidate for circuit court judge position was killed in a motorcycle accident after ballots were mailed to the military and out of state, but before the 30-day law provided that we had to change the ballots. Therefore, my office was tasked to redline through the candidate's name on the remaining 38,000 ballots prior to mailing to my standard electors, and to also mail a second ballot to those military and out of state electors who received the ballot without the red line, thus being costly and confusing. So below is an explanation from the Washington County election office official who had a similar situation. Here are some of the reasons why we keep the status the way it is, and it is a countywide position when someone dies. The military will have to be reissued added expense, ballot envelopes, and maybe insert. All ballots will have to be reprinted or blackened, cost of reprint or staff to black out. Some counties will have begun the ballot inserting process at a mailing company. This is much more major than with other problems. Most counties are using signature graphics, and we are all stacked like pancakes in a very small window. If one of us takes too long, then the stress begins to show up the next in line. What we're trying to do here with this bill is just get all the dates the same. So if we're mailing it out 45 days for military and others, and we're doing the other one at 30, then we need to get this change in the law to coincide with the one that we have to do first. So what we're moving it back to is moving it back before we have to mail out the ballots for the military. So once we make the correction, it stays. If the person is thus, after that, dies or another change is made, you don't have to go back and redo all the ballots. I hope that makes some sense. The problem was happening when you have between the 30-day requirement that we have currently to mail out ballots here and the 45-day ballot time. If something happens in those days, it makes a very confusing and expensive fix for the county offices. And I look forward to any questions you might have. And I know we have some clerks here. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm in favor of the bill, Representative. I just had a question in line 7 and 8 under Section 1. It says the name of the candidate may not be printed on the ballots, or if they have already been printed, shall be erased or canceled before the ballots are delivered. I'm wondering how you erase a name off the ballot after it's already been printed.
They found very hard. That's why they decided to use the other option, which is to put a line through it. I think it says erase or.
Or cancel.
Cancel.
And so a red line.
The red line through it was a canceling.
Okay.
Questions from the committee for the distinguished testifier? Okay.
Thank you.
Next, we'll call up Georgette Brown from the Oregon Association of County Clerks.
For the record, I'm Georgette Brown, representing the Oregon County Clerks Association. But actually, the distinguished chair said everything that I need to say. So I just want to say that I agree with this bill, and the association agrees with this bill, and we hope you do pass it.
Thank you very much. There's no one else on the list. Is there anybody in the that forgot to sign up, that was dying to come and testify for this bill? Then we'll... Was that just a public hearing?
This was a public hearing and possible work session.
So we're going to close the public hearing on this bill. Is anybody concerned about moving it to a work session? We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2621.
Mr. Chair? I move House Bill 2621 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 2621 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Excused.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan? Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Yes.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye.
Motion passes. Did you want to say something before we close the motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that we consent calendar.
Aye. Also, anybody?
No.
She wants
okay.
to carry this bill.
No, I don't mind carrying it. I
will carry this bill, actually.
With all due respect to Representative Jensen, I would read this on the floor and say that is a significant change and be a little discomforted. I prefer that it not go on the second
okay.
order.
Only takes one.
About your superior.
Well, it's my attitude.
I would be honored to carry this one, so we'll put this one up for me. Thank you. So, we're going to open a public hearing on public hearing on 2414. Pardon? A little soft there now. We have already heard this bill once. Is there anyone that's signed up to testify? Oh, here it comes. We'll give a short explanation of 2414.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. 2414 adds provisions to ORS 254.135, allowing ballots to list names of not more than two political parties that have nominated a candidate for an election. Adds provision specifying that when candidate is nominated by a party to which a candidate belongs, and one or more other parties, names of party candidates, and one other party selected by the candidate shall be listed. At the previous hearing, you discussed, testimony discussed the amendment, an amendment to increase the number of allowed party designations from a total of two to a total of three. Differences from other legislative proposals, specifically HB 2580, and the prior history of multiple party ballot designations in Oregon. The dash one amendments, did you want me to discuss that at all? Allows the names of a total of up to three political parties to appear opposite the name of a candidate. Also requires the Secretary of State to conduct a general review of the adoption of a cross-nomination system for candidates for public office in Oregon and report to the Legislative Assembly not later than October 1, 2010.
Thank you very much. I am intending, after the hearing, with we hear stuff too, open a work session on this and to move that dash one amendment. And for that reason, I wanted to have any hearing if anybody wants to speak on that. So right now we have Jan Coleman from the Oregon Association of Clerks and Linda Williams, Independent Party of Oregon. Come on up.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Jan Coleman. I'm representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. I'm a retired county clerk. We've spoken on this proposed bill before. The county clerks voted in a conference here a few weeks ago that they support the bill as written with two names. And primarily that is because we were concerned that not all of the election systems in the state could support three names. We've done some more playing with systems, you might say. There is one system out there that is definitely experiencing some problems with the three names. We did, however, propose and give a fiscal if we could do abbreviations, three-letter abbreviations, and do that. We believe that would work for everyone. It would also work on everyone's reporting systems, which was another concern because Marion County has a 20-year-old reporting system that is no longer supported. Anyway, so we've presented you a fiscal that looks to the abbreviated form, and with the abbreviated form, we feel that it's fairly negligible as far as a fiscal to the clerks. We can't guarantee anything if the names are full.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you.
Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your proposal suggests three-letter abbreviations for each party. If a candidate chose either earned only one nomination or chose not to accept additional nominations but only wanted to be listed as affiliated with the party that she or he belongs to.
That's true.
Under your proposal, would it be possible for that candidate to list the full name of that party?
Chair Roblin, Representative Nolan, it's hard to say. There's three different systems out there. I believe the system I worked with, it could be done. I'm not sure every one of them could. Because basically what you do is create a party for each one of those type things. So I could create a party that was, it probably wouldn't, it would have different three-letter beginnings is the thing. I couldn't have a DEM that was just an abbreviated form and a DEM that was totally spelled out.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the candidate have the right to refuse?
Yes.
In the bill?
I'm sorry, yes.
Just to clarify that one.
Representative Nolan.
The candidate doesn't have a right to refuse at least one.
Correct. I'm sorry, yes. That's
right. So the candidate has to be listed as nominated by at least one party.
Right.
But they can decline subsequent parties.
Right. Thank you. Any other questions for clerk? Yes, Representative Berger.
If you went to this abbreviation, I'm sitting here looking at this and saying, I don't know what the PGV party is. Is there going to be somewhere in the ballot something that's going to tell me what the PGV ballot party is?
Chair Roblin and Representative Berger, I thought of that myself, and that's difficult for me to say and volunteer for everyone else. I'm thinking it could be done. Certainly with the system I work with, it could be done. I can't volunteer that for everyone else in the state.
And my question is, so that when the Secretary of State's office talked about the system that most of the groups use, I guess that was 32 of the 36 counties, I think?
That's correct.
They said that they could do the three titles fully written, but they'd be very small.
Correct.
So we're talking about four counties that may not be able to. Have we checked to see if they could actually do it?
We, Marion County can do it on the ballot because they still typeset.
Okay.
So theirs is fairly flexible. The Sequoia system in Lane County is the one that we have doubts about. And that's the one that's presented here on your fiscal, too. The two other counties have the HART system, and I believe it could do the three names.
One county.
Chair?
Representative.
And I don't know if who can answer this question. Can we define very small, though?
Yes.
I think it's a non-trivial question for quite a few of our voters. If the type is 6-point, it is effectively not available to many voters.
I think we.
How small would we be talking about?
Chair Roblin, Representative Nolan, I do not work with that system.
Okay.
So I'm not able to tell you that.
But on the one that is used by most counties, do we know how small the.
That is the one that's used by most counties, and I'm sorry.
Okay.
We can find it out. We're not going to. I think we'll move the amendment. We're not going to move the bill, so we can look at that.
Just to clarify, I appreciate the effort to try to be to accommodate this, and I think this is actually a pretty clever way to do that. I agree with the implied part of Representative Berger's question that the purpose is to give voters more information, and if it doesn't give them more information, it doesn't serve that purpose. I also want to be mindful of those who are having a bit of a hard time as I move into that bracket myself. Of being able to read really tiny letters. But on the other hand, I also am very concerned about anything that would push the ballot to a longer length, causing added postage and the problems that Representative Edwards brought to us earlier about ballots not, you know, people returning them and not having enough postage on them. Who thought this would provoke so many questions?
Mr. Chair,
Representative.
I would like to offer up to Representative Nolan one of the 8 or 9 or 10 pairs of reading glasses that I have hanging out.
I'll take you up on that.
And I can suggest you can buy them in bulk and have them spread out all over because your husband might grab them and walk them. I do have a legitimate. I want to confirm that what she's really saying that there is for sure one state, one county, Lane County, that definitely would have to use abbreviations, and the rest of the 35 counties probably could get three names on there, even if they were, some of them would be in small type. Is that what you're saying?
Chair Roblin, Representative Berger, actually, she's tried it, as you will see, she's
going to continue to try it and see. Sometimes it takes us a while to find a workaround. So it's not a total guarantee that she can't do it right now. She knows she can do it this way.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes, follow up.
So I think that what we need is more information. Yeah, Mr.
I think
Chair.
That's true. And there is a ballot going around that shows what the current system can do, and size-wise, three ballots, and I'll send that around so you can look at it. Yes. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'd like to clarify that in Lane County specifically, we would need to use the abbreviations if the amendments were adopted so that three nominating parties could be listed. Would we or would we not need the abbreviations if the amendments were not adopted and it was only two parties?
Chair Roblin, Representative Edwards, it's Lane County's thought that it probably would not have to be if there were two, because right now her system does accommodate working families, all spelled out.
I don't know if I support the amendments or not now.
Okay, any other questions for our clerk? Nope. Then we'll move on.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I don't really have anything to add. I did supply some very brief supplemental testimony that dealt merely with a historical background on another related point. But I do want to take the opportunity to thank Ms. Coleman and the clerks who've obviously spent some time trying to accommodate this and to answer the questions.
Don't forget to say your name, Linda.
Oh, I'm Linda Williams. I came forward when the chair said the witnesses could come forward. I'm Linda Williams. I'm chair of the Independent Party and an attorney in town, in Portland town. I would like to just mention, because the very helpful information that Ms. Coleman supplied, that I believe it's by administrative rule that the Secretary of State prepares the voter pamphlet statements that you all are aware of, the candidate statements. And as you're also aware, when you look at those candidate statements, the nominating party is listed at the top. And because of the way the current statute has been implemented and cross nominations have not appeared on the ballot, there's always been one identifying party label. Usually the party label for major parties, when you won your primary, you're the Republican or the Democratic candidate. I'm assuming, but of course I can't assume for the Secretary of State, they may do this by administrative rule and we'll have a chance to comment. I'm assuming that if there were the opportunity to give more information on the ballot and preserving the candidate's right, of course, to either decline a nomination altogether or to choose those nominations which she preferred appeared on the ballot, whether it's one or two or three, I suppose, I'm assuming that the Secretary of State could also carry forward that thinking to the voters' pamphlet, so that at the discretion of the candidate, perhaps the candidate's party, Republican candidate, and then whatever other party has nominated that person, or obviously Democratic candidate, or Democratic and Republican for those individuals that win the nomination of the other party, other major party, by write-in. So it might be possible that the voters' pamphlet in Lane County, which appears to be the one county where it's not as clear, might not be as clear on the ballot. It might well be clear that Pacific Green Party, which is the PGP, that might be spelled out in full in the voters' pamphlet statement, even though it might appear by abbreviated form in the on the ballot. And of course, if they were merely local offices, and so it was that local portion of the voters' pamphlet that was submitted, it seems conceivable that the full party name could be explained in the voters' pamphlet statement. This is the Pacific Green Party candidate per in PGP on the ballot. So I just throw that out as just a thought as to how the voters' pamphlet statements and the ballot kind of intersect and intermesh in terms of their ability to give the voters that information.
Any questions for this witness?
Thank you very much.
And those were the only people on the list. Is there anyone else that's having come forward, please? Thank you. And for the record, state your name. And
good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Kushwa, and I'm here representing UFCW Local 555. That's the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. And while UFCW Local 555 was in support of House Bill 2580, since 2414 is the bill that seems to be moving most effectively, we would like to express publicly our support of this bill in its form with three parties and as the amendments dictate. And I just want to go on the record. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you.
Do you want to spell your last name for the record? Thanks.
For the record, C-U-S-H-W-A.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one more. Two more.
We're together.
Okay.
It's tandem. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Amy Wilson. I work for the Secretary of State's office. I just wanted to clarify something. I think that you all have brought it up in your discussion around information. The concern that we have a little bit with the abbreviating of names on a ballot is that some parties, people are going to be way more familiar with. When we enfranchise parties for the first time, it's going to be new to everyone, particularly if they have, you know, I think some abbreviations just make more sense to folks. And so that is a little bit of a concern that we have in the Secretary of State's office. And I wanted to bring Brenda up to address what we can do officially.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Bays. I'm the Deputy Director for the Secretary of State Elections Division. What we provide to counties by statute is a certified ballot that we provide to them 61 days prior to the election, which addresses font size, the spelling out of the party name, abbreviation, what abbreviation would be used for the party name. And we lay out each office with the candidate name and their party next to them, and that is how the directive provides for the process the counties are to follow when printing their ballots. And with regard to the voters' pamphlet, that is correct what Linda Williams said. We could do that by administrative rule, in which we could say the candidate's party that they are a member of would be listed first, and the sequential names of those parties would follow.
Questions? Representative Berger.
Would then you get these nomination, how would you get the information on, would it be part of the voter's pamphlet submission of the candidates as to which nominations would go by their names?
Chair Roblin, Representative Berger, we could include an administrative rule for the filings of voter's pamphlet that they would submit the party names that they wish to be associated with their candidate names.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Do you want to make the amendment?
Anyway, okay. Pardon?
Not really.
Yeah, because I'm in a normal work session. Do you want to make it? So I'm going to close the public hearing on, make sure I get this right, 2621, and I will open work.
No, 2414.
2414. Close it on 2414, and I will. Okay. And open a work session on House Bill 2414.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -1 amendment stated 22309 to House Bill 2414.
Representative Berger moves the amendments. I want to make sure I have the right deal. Moves that we adopt the -1 amendments, House Bill 2414. Discussion. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, in light of, I'm fine conceptually with the three adding the three parties. I am not fine with abbreviations, and in light of a lack of clarity about whether or not Lane County is going to be able to accomplish it by spelling it out, I'm not going to be able to support without confirmation from Lane County as to if they can get the entire name unabbreviated of the party on there, and if it takes a workaround, if there's cost involved, I want to know that. So I'll be a no on the amendment because of that technicality surrounding the abbreviation. I'm fine with putting the three parties on, and I think it's better than the two, but I'll be a no on the amendment for now. So,
Representative Jensen.
I'll be a no, no.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Just, Mr. Chair, discussion. I'm supportive of the amendment, given what we have now. It does provoke a theoretic concern if we were ever to have a party whose official name is exceedingly lengthy. But for the moment, I'll support the amendment because I think it does open opportunities for voters that they should have.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the problem, as I understand it from the clerks, are in a couple of counties that have systems that are probably due for upgrades. And if, as we move forward on this kind of thing, this is the kind of thing that I think is very solvable in the long run. And we're almost solved under our current system. I mean, we're so close. So I think we should go ahead. I'm going to support the amendment, but I will be anxious to hear from the counties on sort of the denouement and how this ends up before we would vote on the main bill.
And as I have said earlier, we will. My intention right now is to get the amendment out there so people can look at this bill as it should be. And then we will close the work session and look down the road for the work session on it. Yes, Representative Garrard.
I really feel like Representative Edwards has a very viable concern here. So I was planning on voting no, but if you want to move this amendment, then I'll probably vote yes.
Thank you. And we do. I just want to make sure that we clearly have our physical and our revenue statements on this one, since I messed up the last time. So
we do. There is no revenue impact under either the amendment or the original bill. There is no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, I should say, and no fiscal impact under the original, and a minimal fiscal impact under the -1 amendment. And we have all of those at the dais.
Okay. So with that, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Garrard?
Can I vote last? Can't we agree?
You need your yes.
Representative Gelser?
Excuse.
Representative Jensen?
Mr. Chair, I assume we're voting on the amendment?
Yes.
Not that it matters. No.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Yes.
Vice Chair Edwards?
No.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. So that total was?
Five votes.
It passes. Thank you for that. And we will close our work session on House Bill 2414. Thank you. And thanks for all being here.
The next one is 2495.
Yeah, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2095. And we'll have a short statement by our administrator.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. HB
95 makes substantive and technical changes to statutes governing the conduct of elections, provides that the county is not required to perform post-election hand counts if the county is required to conduct a county-wide recount, adds recall elections to the state contest of election statutes in ORS Chapter 258, clarifies the term of office for appointments made filling a vacancy in the position of the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and several other changes that we previously discussed. There is a proposed amendment, 2095-1. That amendment would clarify that a random hand count required under ORS 254.529 is to be conducted by each county clerk for an office to be voted on in the state at large rather than for a state office, in quotes. It extends to 3 business days the time within which the Secretary of State is to advise the county clerks concerning the hand count requirements, and requires hand counts to begin not later than the 20th rather than the 21st day after an election. And that completes my summary.
So this was the bill that we went through section by section with the clerk's office. Is there any concerns? And I would entertain the amendment, I guess, first.
Mr. Chair?
Oh.
I move the committee adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2095.
Representative Edwards has moved that we adopt the -1 amendments dated 2/11/09, the House Bill 2095. Discussion. And revenue and we have both statements?
Yes.
Okay.
We have both revenue and fiscal statements. There are minimal expenditure impacts under either the original or -1 fiscal statements. No revenue impact under either scenario.
Okay. Any discussion? Any clarification needed since we do have the Secretary of State?
Not on the amendment, but Mr. Chair, I'm trying to catch up on something in the bill itself, so I'm not quite ready to vote on the bill. Are you planning to move the bill?
This one
I
was planning on moving. So we can take the vote on the amendment, just on the amendment. So we'll take a roll call vote.
Sorry.
Excused.
Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. Motion passes, so it is amended. We'll take a motion.
We have a brief recess.
Oh, yes, we can. We'll take a brief recess. We're in a work session on House Bill 2095, and we have some things that we want to look at more closely. So we have passed the amendment, as it was done already, and now we're going to close our work session on 2095, and we'll get back to scheduling it in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, so next one. So now we're going to open a work session on 2466. I will have a short explanation, and it's nice to have you here, Dick.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. HB 2466 requires administrative rule review reports to be considered by interim committees with subject matter jurisdiction over a state agency's area of responsibility rather than the Legislative Council Committee. It requires Legislative Council to develop lists of state agencies with areas of responsibility primarily within the subject matter jurisdiction of interim committees and to assign all state agencies to at least one interim committee for rule review. Previously discussed were issues about the backlog of rules that are subject to review, the workload impact on legislative committees, the obligation to review bills upon the request of a legislator. Under existing law, ORS 187.710-.725, which has been in place since 1963, Legislative Council prepares administrative rule review reports at the direction of the Legislative Council Committee or upon written request from any member of the Legislative Assembly. Proponents asserted that about 1,600 rules are reviewed annually at the present time. Reports by Legislative Council are submitted to the Legislative Council Committee for consideration. Proponents assert that there's an existing backlog of rules to be reviewed and that it is difficult to eliminate that backlog because the Legislative Council Committee meets infrequently. According to proponents, HB 2466 would wipe the slate clean on an existing backlog as of January 1, 2009 and does not change the Legislative Council's obligation to review rules upon legislator request. That's my summary.
So this is a bill we heard a week or so ago, and it has to do, as all of you know, with streamlining and taking care of a backlog that's existed for a long time. There are no amendments. It's pretty much the same way it was. Our legal counselor is here if people would like to have any questions before we move to vote on this bill. But over the last week or so, having checked with different people, I've gotten no feedback that's thinking this is negative. So I just, yes, Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, with a comment, I served on the Legislative Council Committee and think this is a very good answer to the issues around this rulemaking review. And I would move House Bill 2466 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
First, let me take the motion. Representative Berger moves House Bill 2466 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and we'll make sure that we have our revenue and other fiscal.
We have both revenue and fiscal statements, each of which show no revenue. Well, they show no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, respectively.
So, any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Yes.
Chair Roblin?
Aye.
Motion passes, and we will. I think this is another one of those that needs to be carried. Would you like to, as
I'd be happy to carry.
Representative Berger will carry this bill.
I will ask that Ledge Council sit beside me on the floor to be ready for
any
technical questions that will confront me.
Okay. And we have a nod in the affirmative to that, so that's a really good thing. So our next, we will open a work session on House Bill 2588. So we'll have a short explanation of 2588.
Okay.
And whether we have a revenue in this.
I'll get that process right.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. House Bill 2588, at this point we have revenue and fiscal impact statements, each of which indicate no impact. House Bill 2588 enacts Oregon's participation in an interstate compact for the election of the U.S. President by national popular vote, provides that compact takes effect when enacted by states that cumulatively possess a majority of all electoral votes. It establishes procedures requiring the chief election official of each state participating in the compact to separately determine the national popular vote winner by tallying votes in all states, those that either belong to the compact and those that do not, and certify the electoral slate nominated in that state in association with the national popular vote winner. It provides a mechanism for the state to withdraw from the compact and terminates the compact if the Electoral College is abolished. The existing mechanism for selecting a president provides for indirect election through the Electoral College. Proponents of SB 2588 assert that the president selected through the Electoral College should reflect the national popular vote. This is not a new concept, but increased attention has been devoted to the idea since the hotly contested presidential election in November 2000. One approach, abolishing the Electoral College, requires a federal constitutional amendment, and in the usual case, the support of the legislatures in three-quarters of the state. There are other approaches which we discussed previously, including the approach taken in SB 2588, a compact between states to cast Electoral College votes for national popular vote winners. Opponents of the National Popular Vote Compact assert that the compact approach seeks to do indirectly what cannot be done directly, in other words, amend the U.S. Constitution, negates the impact on presidential election of the voters in states that do not belong to the compact, and adversely affects federalism. That's my report.
Thank you very much. Committee, we had, a very good conversation and debate on this issue the last time it came up, and I look forward to seeing that carry over, but is there any comments or discussion with respect to this bill before we vote on it? Seeing none, do you wish to make the motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2588 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 2588 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Yes.
Chair Roland?
Yes. Motion passes. Anyone would like to carry this on the floor? Representative Gelser?
Carry that.
Okay. Very good.
That's it.
Again, I want to thank everyone for finding this room after we moved it around a couple times.
Thanks to MapQuest.
Well, I do appreciate that. Number two, I had this ambiance that there were people who were driving home on Friday, so we will not have a meeting on Friday. And then we'll be back here Monday with a number of bills on the record. So. And it also...
when I get to meet on Friday.
Yeah, yes, we do. I was going to say, we have a different committee meeting that day. Okay, with any comments or other discussions? Seeing none, we will close our committee on rules. Thank you all for being... Oh, I should have done something. Did you want to vote? Did we pass any others out that she was not here?
I think you didn't pass any of them out. You just adopted amendments. That was the update that I got.
Then we're okay.
Yes, thank you.